Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
But I'm super excited about this particular segment. We've been talking about this for days because joining us here live and in person, he's going to head up a class/whiskey seminar here at Total Wine & More in about 30 minutes. It is the head distiller at Balcones, the great Jared Hempstead.
Yes!
Jared, how are you doing?
Man? Doing good, man.
Yes.
When Ben said, hey, man, Jared's going to be there and we should get him on the air, I was super excited because Ben and I have talked about this concept for a long time. We wanted to help listeners get educated about things that we think are cool, that they think are cool, because once you learn more about it, you sort of appreciate it more. And I just know personally, when I kind of started learning more about whiskey, it changed my whole approach to drinking it and how I started appreciating it. And so that's kind of what we wanted to focus on here. And so one of the questions, my wife actually asked me this, how does someone become a head distiller? What is that journey like to where you decide, man, this is where I'm going?
I've only done it once. And so mine is mostly on accident. There are a few degreed programs you can do, kind of brewing and distilling related stuff in the U.S. and then some in the U.K. too. But I just kind of dumb-lucked my way into it, I think. Got into homebrewing first and making beer, and then just kind of got enamored with scotch and with a couple other brewing buddies. We were just dumb enough to not know that it was a horrible idea to put all your life savings into something like that. You've never even done it before. Just like, how hard could it be? But I think it's worked out pretty good.
Yeah, it's worked out really good. Okay, so what I like about you, and it's obvious about everybody that we run into with your company, is that the word approachable comes up a lot. Like, you're pretty open, pretty cool to talk about anything. And so, you know, I was worried because the way I drink whiskey is not like probably the way the experts drink it. I like to mix it with stuff. I like to trick it up a little bit, but it doesn't seem to bother people. So I want to ask you, how would you answer this question? What is the right way to drink whiskey?
I mean, the correct answer is however you like it, right?
Yes.
There's plenty of flavor science that can be discussed when talking about how your glassware, adding water, doing ice, all of things affect how you experience what the producer made. They all have objective effects on your experience, but does that make them right or wrong? I mean, I have ways of drinking whiskey I don't enjoy that other people who are nerds and collectors and know a lot do. So, you know, it's a little bit each his own.
So I think the first time I met you, I didn't know that you were the head distiller, and we were just kind of hanging out at the new Balcones bar at Texas Live, and I think I probably ordered Baby Blue the way I like to drink it, which I drink it with 7. And so what I want to know is that like, you know, going to Nick and Sam's and having a $100 ribeye and then asking for ketchup? Or are you just like, you know what, it's all good, however you want to?
I mean, I don't know where Nick and Sam's is, but, you know, these days – everyone's making their own ketchup in-house and all that crap. Maybe it's delicious. You know, well done is absolutely incorrect.
Right.
Don't do that.
Yes, got it.
Or if you're going to do that, then definitely go ahead and put the Baby Blue on some 7.
Yeah, there you go.
So, Jared, do you ever have anxiety over a head cold? Or, like, I'm very interested in people that have finely attuned senses, whether it's smell or taste, those things work together. Yeah. Even, you know, an eye for art or those sorts of things. Like, if you wake up and you have a head cold, are you like, man, I'm going to make the wrong batch? Or does that impact your world?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely don't try to do any blending on weeks that kind of sign of stuff going on, allergies, anything like that. I mean, luckily, I'm not the only person that does any of the sensory analysis or making cuts on the still, so it's not a problem. I just have to schedule around things like that.
Okay, and I'm interested in this, when you say sensory analysis, because, like, there's a sommelier for wine or whatever. How did you know that, man, my palate is so distinguished that I can do this sort of thing?
I mean, I tend to kind of demystify that whole idea a little bit. You guys talk about sports all the time, right? So if someone's the high end, they're going to fall in. Like, this guy's never going to play worse than this. He could be amazing, depending on how hard he works, injuries, all that stuff. We'll find out where in that spectrum, but he could do nothing. He's already going to be better than most of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he could be, you know, a Hall of Famer. What's he going to do during his career will determine where he falls in there. And I feel like the same thing. I mean, people, there's probably people who don't pay attention, don't drink whiskey with that in mind, that biologically might have a much better palate than me. It doesn't really, a lot of it's time spent. You got to know pretty broadly the spectrum of what we're working on, where it fits into the world of whiskey, which means you've had to have tried a lot.
Right.
So some of that is just no shortcut for that kind of exposure. A lot of it's vocabulary, learning how to talk about it, learning how to communicate, because mm-hmm. most people are smelling and tasting a lot of stuff, and it's hard to put that into words.
Right.
And be able to communicate that to someone else, especially if you're trying to work together. You use terms differently. Just things you have to get familiar with over time. So, no, I don't – I mean, it's what I do for work. I don't think that it's necessarily started in a place that was exceptional.
Right.
But, you know, you pay attention, you work hard, take it seriously, and try and do the best job you can, you know.
Talking to Jared Hempstead, the head distiller at Balcones, the president of the Texas Whiskey Association.
Whiskey.
We're at Total Wine and More. He's got a class going on tonight, and I believe that thing is sold out at this point. Oh, there's maybe a couple walk-ups available if you want to come up and join. He's going to be giving a class. He's been nice enough to jump on with us early. Okay, Balcones is distilled in Waco, Texas. So how is distilling and or aging different in Texas than it is in Scotland or Kentucky?
Ooh, I love this.
I mean, the main thing is going to be maturation climate. So as we all know, last week we've probably had 30, 35 degree swings daily from the high to low. You know, you get about a 20 degree swing from the coldest time of the year to the hottest time of the year in Scotland. So when the wood, I don't know if you ever lived in a really old house, but
yes,
you know, in the summer the doors don't shut, and then in the winter there's a gap an inch thick and it's breezy and, like, you know,
yeah,
that's what the barrel's doing too. It's swelling up. When it swells up, it's sucking the whiskey real deep into the wood, and then when it cools off and gets harder, shrinks out, squeezes that all back out. So it's kind of like a sponge over the changes in temperature. So somebody in Scotland's going to say, oh, this whiskey could use another summer. What they're talking about is one more trip deep in and then pushed back out.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, that could be, man, this thing might need to get checked in a few weeks, because it's going to be getting a 40-degree change every day for the next, mm-hmm. you know, few weeks. And so we have to stay on top of it a little bit more. But that just means we get wood extraction, all the flavor and aromas that come from wood. Texas is not a problem. That can
right.
happen really fast. So the trick for us has been all the other things that are happening while whiskey is aging and maturing, to figure out all kinds of tricks and change our process where those things are also accelerated, so that you end up with a balanced product and not just a big wood bomb, which in Texas, that's very easy to do.
Yeah, and how much did you guys kind of know what was going to be when you first embarked? The reason I ask is I went on this wine tour of, you know, Fredericksburg and all that, and they're like, all these Texas people wanted to make cabs, and little did they know they need to be making Tempranillos, because mm-hmm. that's what the environment was for.
Right.
So you're explaining what happens with the wood. When you guys started out, did you know what your process was going to be?
No. Like I said, there's a few other distilleries in Texas. We were all kind of getting started at the same time. But we know for a fact no one had been making whiskey in Texas since Prohibition, and maybe even before that. We haven't. There's a few historic leads that need to be tracked down, but we haven't found, like, absolute proof of anybody ever really distilling legally in Texas. That said, like, I mean, it was wide. We had no idea. Nobody knew what was going to happen. We knew enough about some of the wood science and how maturation goes to expect a few things, but I mean, it was definitely a just learn as you go.
Has it been advantageous for you guys that the climate is the way it is here?
Yeah, I mean, whiskey's funny because everyone gets so hung up on age.
Yeah,
give me your oldest thing. What's the oldest thing you got?
Right.
You know, he's probably hearing that over there right now.
Let me have your 21.
Yeah. And of course, you know, we've done pretty well in reviews and competitions. When they're blind and nobody knows, it's usually not a problem. So we kind of, ironically, we've been spending the last few years trying to figure out how to get the stuff older, which is, everybody else would love to get their product out quicker.
Right.
But it goes really fast. So yeah, it's definitely a time advantage for sure. Yeah. If we're working on a new product, we don't have to wait 6 to 8 years to check it for the first time and see how it's going. We'll know if it's going in a good direction in like 6 to 8 months.
Wow.
All right, this is a real honor. If you can't tell, Skin and I are downright giddy. We're talking to Jared Hempstead, the head distiller of Balcones and the president of the Texas Whiskey Association. He's about to be teaching a class up here. He's nice enough to come down from Waco. And I got a question. So, like Baby Blue, smells like melted butter, vanilla, toffee, finishes with cinnamon spice. So are those all just natural flavors coming out of the wood, or are you putting cinnamon in it, or how does that work?
No, yeah, we don't do any flavoring or coloring. We don't do any chill filtration, which is a whole other issue. But no, our stuff is coming out. It gets distilled, made from grain. Every flavor we're getting is either from the yeast we use, the fermentation parameters. You can kind of control ester formation and a few other things. The stills we use give us a lot of body and mouthfeel, which carries into the final product. And then the stuff that's in the barrel. Yeah, so just completely traditional process. Those notes are all going to either be coming from the grain, how we run the stills, how we do the fermentation, or the barrels that we choose. Yeah.
What is your own personal favorite spirit that you guys distill?
We do so many kind of one-offs every year and special releases that it's easy to be excited about the most recent thing we worked on.
Right.
But, you know, Desert Island, if I had to pick, like I'm going to be a single malt guy through and through. So if I had to pick, which I don't want to, obviously, we do like 21 different releases this year. Mm-hmm. So obviously I don't like having to pick, but
I'm forcing you.
Yeah,
to.
If I had to.
So you said you started out making beer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just homebrewing, yeah.
What was the impetus to take it from beer to whiskey?
I got tired of beer.
Really?
Yeah.
It was that simple?
Yeah. I was brewing a lot and then, opened a beer bar in Waco with a buddy. We talked about maybe doing some brewing there and getting brew pub permits and all that stuff, which we never did. And then, yeah, just beer coming out of your ears day in, day out. And then now beers work. And, I guess wandering eye thing. But then all of a sudden it was like, I'm going to be drinking scotch instead. So,
yeah.
And now it's kind of the opposite. It's like working in whiskey. And so whiskey, it's great, but it feels like work. It's part of the craft, right? It's part of the trade. And so things like beer and wine don't necessarily feel like that. And so to get a break from it where you don't have to like pay super, you know, super intensive, you know, attention to what you're doing. It's kind of nice to switch gears sometimes, you know?
So what are you going to drink for a beer? Like if you're, you know, like you said, drink so much beer that you're like, let's move to whiskey. Now you're doing so much whiskey. You just want a beer. Is it something you're going to make yourself or are you going to buy?
I don't have time for that, man.
Yeah.
Someday I'll get back to it. I think all of our stuff is so kind of huge and big and bold. Even when it comes to whiskey, I usually drink things that are very different from that. So a lot of really kind of light, paler, lowland, Speyside stuff, scotch. Or, beer-wise, there's not a whole lot that's off the table. I mean, I did that for so long. I mean, I kind of just love the whole gamut of beer. But these days, it's a lot of, you know, pilsners, just kind of light, easy drinking stuff. I've had to realize over my lifetime that beer is kind of it's kind of a lifestyle thing, you know. There's a volume consideration, and as you age, you gotta kind of tone it down a little bit, the ABV.
Yeah.
So it would have been, you know, big imperial stouts and crazy, you know, all that stuff years ago. And these days, it's like, you have anything that's under like 5%?
Because
I know I'm gonna drink six of these.
Right.
Yeah.
And I gotta go wake up and, you know, get breakfast for some kids the next morning. So we better tame it down.
But I'm just trying to drink what won't give me the biggest boobs. I mean, just I'm just trying to. Can I? God, just the body slow down. Okay, so we got to let you go so you can go do the class. When you do a class, is that do you get a lot of satisfaction out of that? Is that fun talking whiskey?
Yeah, it's fun. Me and Winston usually collaborate and just kind of tag team telling the story and getting nerdy with technical stuff. Sometimes with the classes, depending on the level of information they already come with. Obviously, on the process side, people that have good questions, the nerdier we can get, the better, the more fun that is. I'm sure, like, people calling in, and it's just like, I think LeBron's going to be great this year, versus, like, some actual analysis.
It's
a lot more fun to, like, actually talk numbers and projections and, like, trends, and, like, that's a lot more fun. So,
well,
kind of the same idea.
Jared Hempstead, head distiller, Balcones, is president of the Texas Whiskey Association. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
They're Shippy. Now, you have a buddy who knows Shippy?
Yeah, Zach Daniel. Used to work at a distillery, worked in the front of house at the bar and did tours. We were good buddies, played music together and stuff. And, I was on my way up. He was listening to the show, and he's like, tell Shippy, hey, for me. We were in drumline together.
Yeah.
So
everybody
knows
Shippy.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
So, wait, he works at the distillery?
He used to. He lives up here now. He's actually doing flight. He's becoming a pilot. He's doing flight school.
Okay,
but,
great.
Yeah, when we first opened, he was at the new location. He was our tour guide and worked up in the bar.
Because a guy named Zach Daniels has to work in whiskey, right?
Yeah, right?
No choice.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.